What if the greatest play ever written was born from a father's unbearable grief? In 1596, an 11-year-old boy named Hamnet died in Stratford-upon-Avon. 4 years later, his father, a playwright we know as William Shakespeare, wrote Hamlet. Maggie O'Farrell's stunning novel bridges this gap, transforming a historical footnote into an intimate portrait of love, loss, and the alchemy of art. Winner of the 2020 Women's Prize for Fiction and praised by The Guardian for its exceptional emotional force, the book has captivated readers from Natalie Portman to everyday people seeking meaning in grief. O'Farrell never names Shakespeare directly, instead calling him simply the Latin tutor or the husband, shifting our focus from the famous playwright to the family who shaped him. This isn't a story about genius. It's about what happens when ordinary people face extraordinary loss and how art can transform private anguish into something eternal. Hamnet searches his empty Henley Street home for his mother, grandmother, and grandfather. The glove-making room stands silent. Outside, kittens he and Judith were playing with scatter creatures their grandmother had meant to drown but couldn't. His twin sister has fallen ill, headache, sore throat, fever rising and falling. When Hamnet races to the physician's house, the woman asks about buboes, lumps under the skin. The word fills him with dread. Miles away, his mother Agnes tends bees, feeling inexplicable unease. Later, she'll believe that if she'd trusted this premonition and returned immediately, she might have stopped what was coming. The pestilence arrived through an intricate chain, from Alexandrian monkeys to Venetian glassmakers to colorful beads in flea-infested rags, finally reaching Judith's hands. When Hamnet returns, he finds his twin alone, skin bluish-gray, breathing shallow. He collapses beside her bed, linking his smallest finger with hers as tears fall. Neither he nor anyone else knows the plague will claim a life that day, just not the one they expect. Agnes Hathaway inherited dangerous gifts from her mysterious forest woman mother. Too dark, too tall, too strange for Tudor society. Unwanted under her stepmother's rule, she harbored a secret. She could read futures by touching the webbed muscle between thumb and forefinger. When her predictions proved unsettlingly accurate, her father begged her to stop this unchristian ability. Despite being merely tolerated, Agnes clung to one memory, being properly loved for what she was. She resolved that if she ever found such love again, she would seize it with both hands. That opportunity arrives when a young Latin tutor is hired to teach her brother. Their attraction ignites immediately in the farmyard where he discovers her with her kestrel. Their courtship unfolds in stolen moments in the apple storeroom, despite her stepmother dismissing him as a feckless, tradeless boy from a disgraced family. At their hastily arranged wedding in Temple Grafton, Agnes wears primrose yellow with a daisy crown, sensing her deceased mother's presence. As her brother gives her away, he whispers to the groom, "Take good care of her, Latin boy, very good care, and no harm will come to you." On a spring morning in 1583, heavily pregnant Agnes slips from her cottage before dawn, avoiding the traditional indoor birth with chattering women. She seeks a childhood clearing where a fallen fir creates natural shelter. As labor progresses, Agnes surrenders to childbirth's overwhelming force. Though she's assisted countless births, both human and animal, she finds herself humbled by the primal power coursing through her body. Her husband wakes to cold sheets and panic spreads. Bartholomew arrives, his fury dissolving when he reveals Agnes had told him her husband had more hidden away inside than anyone else she'd ever met. Agnes's choice to birth alone in the woods, against all social conventions, demonstrates both her practical wisdom as a healer and her fierce independence. The successful delivery of her daughter Susanna in this natural setting forges a profound bond that will shape their relationship for years to come. Agnes's second pregnancy arrives as her husband transforms, sallow-faced, hollow-eyed, soul-stolen. Unable to sleep, yet unable to rise, he drags himself through teaching and grows increasingly irritable. Only young Edmund notices his suffering. Agnes devises a plan. She'll send him to London to expand the family business. When Mary discovers this, she erupts, gripping her son's arm and reminding him of past failures. Agnes refuses to relent. I see no reason to keep him against his will. The labor begins prematurely with unsettling speed. Agnes's intuition signals danger. Defying convention, she refuses the birthing stool, crouching on the floor. The first child arrives swiftly, a boy bearing her husband's chin, her father's fair hair, her mother's delicate fingers. Then the midwife announces, "There's another one coming." The second labor proves brutal. The baby girl emerges silent, lifeless, the umbilical cord wrapped like a noose around her neck. Only in Agnes's arms does the impossible occur. The infant releases a thin, spiraling cry, her minute form rinsing itself pink. The twins, Hamnet and Judith, reshape the family. While their father pursues his theatrical career in London, making intermittent journeys back, Agnes shoulders child-rearing and navigates relationships with her in-laws. Judith remains delicate and prone to illness. Hamnet blossoms into a remarkably perceptive boy, becoming the family's emotional anchor and the bridge between his increasingly absent father and the household in Stratford. When pestilence strikes, Agnes refuses to leave Judith's side, tending her feverish daughter through the night. Eliza sends a desperate letter to the father in London. In the novel's most devastating twist, Agnes wakes to discover it's not Judith who's gravely ill, but Hamnet. The twins have switched places, with Judith sleeping peacefully beside her feverish brother. Their father races home to reach his daughter, unaware his son lies dying. This moment reveals the twins' profound bond. Hamnet has somehow taken his sister's illness upon himself. As his mind drifts to a snowy landscape where he longs to rest, the family gathers, Agnes whispering pleas, Judith struggling to reach her twin, Susanna pressing her fists to her eyes. Then suddenly, Hamnet stops shaking. In his vision of snow, he allows himself to lie down. Held in his mother's arms, Hamnet takes his last breath. The father, absent at his son's death, will spend years transforming private grief into public remembrance. Years later, Agnes enters a London theater and watches two actors discuss a ghost. When the apparition appears in armor, she recognizes her husband beneath the costume. Then she hears the name that stops her heart, Hamlet, passed between the actors like a counter in a game. Furious that he would steal their son's name for a dead king, Agnes prepares to leave. But then, a young man walks on stage, halfway between boy and man, with yellow hair standing up at the brow. When addressed as Hamlet, my son, Agnes freezes. It is him, yet cannot be him. Her son is buried bones, yet here he walks and talks as he would have grown. Agnes understands what her husband has done. He has trained an actor to embody their son, putting himself in death's clutches to resurrect their boy. She moves to the stage's edge as the ghost turns to her and speaks his final words, "Remember me." Through his play, Shakespeare has transformed private loss into public remembrance, ensuring his son will be remembered not just by family, but by the world. O'Farrell's novel reminds us that towering artistic achievements spring from intimate human experiences, love, loss, and the desperate need to make meaning from suffering.